Hey everybody, welcome back to the Rust is Gold Racing Podcast here at Rust is Gold Coffee Shop. I'm here with Tyson Hollywood Garcia.
Hola.
We've got two very special guests here today. We're going to talk about some motorcycle builds. We're going to talk about family a little bit, I think, right?
Yeah, Southwest culture. Yeah.
Sparky's going to show up here in a bit. He was gone last episode, and we're going to talk to him about the Black Widows in his trailer. We've got Susan Bryan here and her father, Eugene Montoya, and we're going to be talking motorcycles.
Down the way, not too far, an old-time rockabilly coffee bar. Wrecking machine tucked in the back, Elvis singing about a Cadillac. I'm on a BSA, been riding all day. Leather's on, goggles too, triumphing, I don't know what you want to do. My boys are on Ducatis, happen now all the while. Yeah, these are rockers, it's their style.
So let's ride,
so let's ride.
So we're here today again with Susan and Eugene, and they are really, it's a really cool story. It's a family kind of oriented story, very New Mexican, very cultured. And they've been in the bike scene for quite some time now. I think the first time I met you two was at the Father's Day show, right? The one
up in Santa Fe.
And
yeah.
That was probably like, what, 8 or 9 years ago, I think? Mm-hmm. Yeah, a bunch of us had ridden out for that Father's Day show, and it's outside of Santa Fe, and there's a bunch of cool, mostly classics, right? A lot of classics, and there was a small cafe racer category, and a few of us were walking through the aisles looking at the bikes, and that's when I saw your green CB that you had built. And there was it just that one, or did you bring out a couple others?
That first year was just the one.
Right.
Yeah, the 500.
The five. And I saw that, and I was like, this is a gorgeous bike. And I was sitting there drooling over it. And then when I got introduced to you two, I found out it was kind of like a father-daughter build. And that's what made it really cool in my eyes. And then getting to know you guys over the years, the idea of a father-daughter family build, I think it kind of solidified it and made it even more cool. So tell us a little bit about how you guys got started and what brought you two into the motorcycle world.
Oh, I'd have to say my dad is a terrible influence on me, right?
Yes.
Always getting me into stuff like this. But, you know, it started out young, really. Bicycle, you know, that was the first thing. One of his, somebody he knew, he was getting rid of the bicycle for his daughter, and so he was able to bring it home. It was a complete mess. So we stripped it down, spray painted it, fixed it back up, and then that was my first bike. And so it was two wheels pretty much ever since that. So.
And how old were you?
Oh gosh, what do you think? Probably about five.
No,
five or
but
six.
At least eight.
You think?
8 years old, yeah.
See, I can't remember yesterday.
And you'd sent me a picture on that story that I wrote on YouTube, and it was you standing next to your dad,
yep,
right?
That's
and
right.
It's in this cool, kind of gritty, like 70s looking fashion.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And it was beach cruisers and beach cruiser bike, banana seat, the whole line. It was cool.
Was it just bicycles that you were into? Were you into dirt bikes or any kind of off road?
Well, we didn't have much when I was growing up, right? So it was whatever we could get as hand-me-downs or find at the flea market and fix it up. And so it was really bicycles that were the most accessible at that point. But when I started to get older, I got interested in motorized. So I was begging my parents for a little moped, which, of course, isn't very cool thinking about it now. But what did you guys say when I wanted one of those?
We thought about it a minute and said, well, you know, if she wants one, let's go find one.
So that's a cool dad thing to do.
So all of a sudden we're looking for mopeds, Vespas, stuff like that. She stumbled on our website, and I think it was in Vietnam, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah, it was a Canadian guy who would get these Vespas and restore them. So you could order them pretty much however you wanted. So I didn't really know much about Vespas at that point in time.
Because you were in college, right?
I was getting ready to be done with college. And hadn't really messed with anything like that before. So ordered it, and it took what seemed like months to get here to the United States, and then finally. But, you know, it was one of those things, you see it, they're like 1965 Vespa VBB with those beautiful rounded fenders, just absolutely gorgeous. Because I love vintage stuff to start with, so I was like, I want that. So that's kind of how that started. And then the Vespa just wasn't fast enough, and then, you know, went from there.
So when do you think you actually started building bikes together?
Motorcycles, that would be, I think it was 2010 when we first got that Honda CB. And
And that was your first build?
Yes.
Yeah, and it's a gorgeous bike for your first build. I mean, you guys definitely knocked it out of the park on that one.
I think one of the ideas is you want to stay so true to what it was to start with, because, I mean, you think about those motorcycles, they're bomb-proof already.
Yeah.
And they're already beautiful in some ways, but just a little bit of tweaking here and there to just make it a little extra special. So that was kind of the thought process behind that first motorcycle.
So why, for our listeners, why did you choose the Honda and the CB out of all the other bikes?
Well, to start off with, I knew that there were parts available, you know, either aftermarket or you could still scrounge stuff up. So that was going to make it easier to deal with. And I think that was one of the main things we looked at.
The parts were available for that bike. They still had salvage yards with those bikes in there. So we figured we wouldn't have too hard a time putting it back together or replacing parts that weren't on it.
Right.
So that's why we started looking at the CBs.
Well, that's what made CB750s and 500s and 350s so popular for cafe racers, right?
Was exactly.
Just the sheer amount of Japanese import motorcycles that there were from the 70s.
It was the most produced bike, right?
Right.
And then that era. I mean, they shipped over more Hondas than any other bike at that time.
Yeah, they're tons of them. So you could, you know, go around any corner and probably find a junk one in somebody's garage or, you know, out in the farm or whatever.
And do you remember how much you paid for it?
Oh, it was probably too much. Right?
Yeah, because it was pretty solid. That's the reason why we paid that price. It was like about, I'm going to guess, what, $1,100?
A little bit more than that.
Was $1,400?
I think more than that.
You know what? I don't really remember.
See, he didn't pay for it, so he doesn't remember.
Hey, it looks like Sparky just got here. Hey, how's it going, man?
Like I said, I'm only 5 minutes late. Got stuck in traffic.
Yeah. Tell us about your camping trip, because you weren't here for the last episode.
Yeah, I know. I heard. It was good. It was really good. We went to Kamado Lake on the 4th of July, and it was just empty. There was all of, like, three other campers there when we showed up.
Wow.
Got our choice spot, and water was like glass. It was real nice and calm. Didn't get a single bite fishing, though, but it was fun.
So did you find any black widows?
No black widows this time.
Awesome.
Luckily, I power washed it. You know, I vacuumed the heck out of it. So no.
Did you bug vomit?
No, it was bug vomit before, so they weren't on the inside. They're all covering the outside.
Okay. Well, good thing you did bug vomit and then go camping.
Yeah, right. Guys were looking for me for weeks.
Yeah.
As we're getting back to the original CB that you bought and the parts that were available, do you guys remember ballpark range, what you ended up paying for it, and the condition?
Well, it was actually in good condition because it was a one owner. So everything was there. It just needed a little TLC and tweaking. I want to say it was close to $2,000.
Wow.
Yeah. So like I said, probably too much.
At that time?
Yeah, at that time.
Yeah. Now, I mean, no, you could double it
easily.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
So single owner, low mileage.
Yeah, the mileage wasn't that low.
Okay.
This is a gentleman who used to live out in Bernalillo, and he would cruise this motorcycle down what is now 550 to Cuba, to the bar over there, hang out and drive back. So he put a few miles on it.
And then it was completely original, right?
Yeah,
you guys got
completely.
It. So what was your inspiration? Like, what did you look to when you started to fabricate this thing?
Well, cafes were first starting to come about, so I liked the idea of having, you know, the hump seat and all that. And it was just a matter of cruising the web and looking at photos and figuring out, you know, what do I want this thing to be? A lot of just staring at it, too, and thinking.
Staring at it, taking it apart, getting in, losing all the parts you didn't want to use, and then sort of fabricating cardboard and stuff to what the vision that she had. So she'd tell me, I want to see this, I want to see that. So I'd cut it up, put it on there, and she'd come home from work and look at it and say, no, change it again. And I'd say, okay. So then I'd cut up some more cardboard, change it a little bit. She'd come back the next day. She says, no, change it again. I said, okay. So finally we came to what she was wanting to see on that motorcycle. So then now it was the problem of fabricating it and trying to find out who could fabricate this metal for us. Because that's an art by itself.
Exactly.
You know? So we did find a guy.
Mm-hmm.
What was his name?
The Junior Burrell in Austin. He's done a lot of work for me
He's
on different motorcycles. Yeah, he didn't work on the 500, but he did seats for me for two of my 750s. And, you know, a lot of it comes down to lines, you know, the proportions and just the right lines. And I don't know if people are that anal about it like I am, but just looking at those things and making sure that they line up and it sort of all flows together.
Well, I think that makes a huge difference. So you see all these amateur builds and they just don't understand the lines. So they may have all the parts, but it doesn't look right. And that's something I've always noticed about your builds is that those lines are just perfect. Just everything lines up, so it makes that bike look almost like it rolled off the factory floor like that.
Right, the way it should have rolled off the factory floor. Nice.
Yeah. See, I made Sparky happy here.
Yeah. he said something. Yeah. Right? He got some compliments.
Paul, you're like Paul's nemesis. Because Paul, like, he built his little 350 cafe, but he's always like, oh, Susan's here, I'm never going to win.
I think a lot of bike builders kind of feel that way because, I mean, if you've never been into their garage, you walk into their garage and there's, what, a dozen awesome cafe builds and you know, Harleys and Impalas, and you guys have a plethora of cool bikes. But, you know, I think the other cool thing that I noticed is that, you know, Albuquerque is a small enough town that you start to recognize the bikes, and you recognize the bike and you know who that person is right away, right? Right. So you go to a bike show and you see four bikes lined up, and they all have kind of the real clean lines. They're all CBs. You know, the Brian family is here,
yeah,
right?
You know, those are all Susan's, right.
Yeah,
for sure.
Susan and her dad are here. And I think for a lot of builders, it was kind of intimidating, right? To see you guys roll out with these really cool bikes. And, you know, I think for a lot of builders, when they see those bikes, it's something that, you know, I think can inspire people in our kind of small niche of cafe racers to build cool, clean bikes up. Because you just don't see them enough.
Right. And that's something I think that we all sort of inspire each other. So sure, some people might look at my bikes, but I'm looking at Chris's bikes or Paul's bikes. You know, every source really is an inspiration. So mm-hmm. I think, and it doesn't matter if it's a Honda or a Harley or whatever, they all can offer something or provide an idea for like the next project. So I think that's kind of the cool part of this too.
Yeah. It's interesting because the whole cafe racer concept was to strip everything off, right? That was the idea. Strip it off, make it like a MotoGP bike and make it fast. And you've taken that concept, but you've made him like classy, you know, not just strip everything off and run it like a stripped down cafe racer. You've actually added design elements to it that take it like a notch up than the average cafe racer. And then there's something about your designs that are kind of, and I think I've mentioned this before to you, there's something very elegant about those designs. It's the lines, like Chris said, but it's just the color scheme and the, you know, the orientation of the tank to the seat, to the cowl. I mean, how do you come up with those ideas?
Well, like I was saying earlier, a lot of it is just sitting and staring at the motorcycle for hours or talking about it. My husband can get annoyed with me. He's like, you've already been staring at that for 45 minutes. It's not going to change itself right in front of you. So why are you wasting your time, right? But it's just, it's kind of a thought process, you know? You just stare at it. What do you think,
Dad?
Yeah,
and that's trial and error. She might come up with an idea, and then it just doesn't work. We'll put it together, we'll put it on the bike, and it's just not right. Like I was telling you earlier, she said it's not right. So we take it apart, do it again. Maybe she'd sleep on it that night and come back and say, I know exactly what I want. So then we do it again, and then I'd say, okay, and she said, that's it. And then again, it comes down to fabricating it, making it work on the bike, making it bolt to the bike or become part of the bike. That's the hardest part of the whole deal. You know, it's making it part of the bike.
Right. And, you know, it's not just the form, it's also the function, right? So there's been things that we've tried before that haven't necessarily worked. You know, so once you start riding it, you realize, okay, I'm going to have to tweak this a little bit. So there's those kinds of trials and errors, too.
Right. I think the other cool thing, too, is you two have kind of paired perfectly, right? So you have the design elements in your head and you have the vision. And then you, as her father, right, have the patience to go back and redo it 10 or 15 times because it's daddy's girl, right?
Yeah.
You can't say no.
Right.
But you do have like a perfect pairing, and I would say you're kind of more mechanically inclined, and you can, you know, you've been working on motors your whole life, and you've got a cool story behind that too.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, what's your background? Yeah.
My background with cars started back, I'll say back in the 60s. I worked in a gas station cleaning the bathrooms and stuff. And there was two young men there at the time, probably in their 30s, 40s, and their last name was Lucky. It was Bill Lucky and Jim Lucky. Jim was the brains, Bill was like the mechanic. They owned this gas station in Old Town, it was called the Chevron.
That was here in Albuquerque?
Yes. Yeah. And I cleaned the bathrooms forever, and I'd go in there and hang out in the shop. In the evenings is when Bill Lucky would work on his personal stuff, which he always had a hot rod of some kind. It was always a 50s, a 57, 55, 56. He's always tearing them apart, and he'd have me cleaning the parts, and I'd watch him and ask him questions, and he more or less took me under his wing and just taught me little things, you know? So I'd be like his little helper cleaning all his stuff. So as I got older, he taught me more. He trusted me more. He left me alone. Do this, do that. He'd go pump gas or change tires or something while I'm fiddling with the car. He one time told me, pull all these bolts off. And I said, what is that? He said, it's the head. What's a head? So then he explains to me he starts telling me what's underneath the head and this and that. So I'm eager to pull all these bolts off. I want to see what's underneath. So I pull all these bolts off. I can't even lift the head. I'm too small.
Was it a flathead?
Yeah, all the bolts are gone, but I can't move it. So then I have to wait eagerly for him to come back. And then he says, I'll get it. Little did I know, the heads are almost glued to the block. There was no way I was going to get it off. I didn't know you had to pry it off. So he pries it off and shows me the pistons, this, that, the other. And little by little, that's how he taught me. I was still riding a bicycle at the time. Wow. I didn't know anything about cars. I didn't own a car. None of my brothers had cars. My father had the family car, but that's about it, you know. But that's where I started.
The funny part about it is his dad, sure, he had a family car, but he wasn't very mechanically inclined. So I think, what did he take an axe to it once?
Yeah, my father didn't understand working things. Anything that moved, he didn't understand it. So one day he's working on his 49 Chevy. He's working on the carburetor and he just can't get it to run right. And I'm out there watching him, sort of holding the tools for him and stuff. And he's cussing up a storm. Every bad word I could imagine is coming out of his mouth. Then he just jumps off the car, runs in the house, and comes walking out of the house with an axe. I'm looking at him like, oh my God, he's going to kill me? You know? He comes in, he just starts whacking that carburetor with that axe, and he's still cussing in Spanish. He takes that carburetor completely off that car, puts the axe down, closes the hood, and walks in the house. That's the end of that car.
You had enough of that. Yeah.
So I'm glad he worked at the gas station and was exposed to that. Otherwise, I wouldn't be where I'm at today.
Right. So were you, as a young kid, working on your family cars and stuff like that? I mean, did that progress?
It did help. That sort of helped my father, but my father didn't have any patience. Mm-hmm. Half the time, he'd get frustrated, walk away, and I'd end up finishing bones by myself.
It's a good way to learn.
You know? Well, if I didn't quite know it, I'd go get Bill. He'd stop by the house, and he'd finish it off.
And it's evident that Eugene's a very patient man. I mean, that's right?
Yes.
You're working with your daughter, helping her through her builds.
Yeah, trust me. I have two daughters. Any man that can work with his two daughters has got to be patient.
Oh, yeah.
But if you ask, as Steve looks back at his daughter with the glare.
Well, we had to cut that because... you can't see what happened, but Sparky was sitting in one of the antique chairs here at Rusta's Gold Coffee, and he fell backward off his chair and was laying there for a few minutes. And tell us why you were in so much pain.
Oh, because I broke my ribs a week and a half ago.
Doing what?
I don't want to talk about it. Dirt biking. I was took my vintage bike, my vintage dirt bike, up on the sand dunes, and the front tire just grabbed some sand and just threw me on my side. Yeah, cracked a few ribs right there, right by my sternum. Yeah.
You okay?
I'm okay.
Right. Where were we?
Patience, right?
Patience
is a virtue. But yeah, I mean, it's evident that you guys have a cool dynamic, right? And Eugene's very patient. And
definitely.
How does your dynamic work? I mean, because I'm envious of it, and I think a lot of people are too, when they see a cool kind of family relationship like this. They can work together and build bikes.
Well, I feel fortunate just because my dad is willing to take the time and show me the stuff that he knows. And like you said, be patient about me learning that or dealing with sometimes I don't want to call them tantrums, but you know, when something doesn't work quite right, he'll help me through that. So
does that happen? I mean, do you get frustrated and kind of?
Yeah. Yeah, there's plenty of frustration. It's a vintage motorcycle.
Right.
Of course, yeah. There's
I think every builder goes through stages of frustration, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But as far as working together, I mean, it's great because he knows so much. So I just, there's no way that you could replicate that or that I could learn all of that. So I don't even know. Obviously, I wouldn't be able to do this if he wasn't here.
When did it kind of turn from like automobiles? You're still into automobiles.
Yes, I am.
When did that interest in motorcycles sort of pick up?
Probably about the time that Susan showed some interest, because I've always had motorcycles in the garage and stuff. And early on, when she was just really young and going to college, she thought that maybe I shouldn't even be riding motorcycles. She said, they're too dangerous. You need to stop that. You need to stop that. You just need to sell those bikes, get rid of them. One day, like I told you early on, she comes home. Yeah, this is after she has her Vespa. She still thinks motorcycles are dangerous. She comes to me and says, hey, what do you think of a Ducati? I said to myself, what the hell's a Ducati? And she says, let me show you. So she shows me this picture of this Ducati. It's sort of cafe'd out. And she says, I want to build something like that. I didn't know at the time what a Ducati was. I was into Harleys and Hondas and Kawasaki's, Suzuki's, all that. Ducati's, all the foreign bikes I knew nothing about. So I figured, since she's showing some interest in it, it's something I could learn also. So it was like, hey, if she wants to open the door, I'm willing to jump in.
That's really cool.
So that's what happened. She says, let's do this. And I said, hey, plus, you know, we're using all her money, which is even more fun.
Right.
Anytime we run into something and we have to build it twice, it's her money.
Yeah,
let's do it again. Okay. You know, so, you know, that was always a lot of fun, too.
So what was your build? Because you'd built the CB for you, mm-hmm. the green on black. And then did you do the orange? Was the orange
no,
on black?
No, I actually, she showed me a 550, wasn't it?
Uh-huh.
A 550. She said, look at this bike. I think you should have this bike. I said, really? She says, yeah, you should have this bike. I said, well, where is it? It was up here in the Heights. So I said, you know what? I'll be up there working in that area tomorrow. I'll stop by and look at it. So I went by, look at this 550, and sure enough, it belonged to some older gent. It was, most of it was there. It was sort of like, what would you say, Frankenstein? Some of the parts that were on it didn't belong on it. So I took it for a ride, and it felt really good. You know, I'd been riding Harleys and Hondas and newer ones. And I said, yeah, this thing's comfortable and it's fun. So I went back, talked to the guy about the price, and I bought it, brought it home. And she says, let's do something with it. And I said, okay, you tell me what you want to do with it, and then we'll do it. See, now I'm paying for this build. So it's no problem there. So she says, let's paint it this color, that color. So she took care of the paint. I took care of all the mechanics on it and stuff. She took care of the design on the seat, the bars, the mirrors, all the stuff that made it look right. So that was my first build, was that Honda 550.
And that was a 78, yeah. So that ended up being close to original, though.
Pretty close.
Yeah. Maybe because he was paying for it. I don't know.
Right. Didn't want to break the bank.
I wanted to reuse as much parts that I could that were already on it without having to replace them to billet stuff.
Right.
Different stuff that's going to cost money. That bike turned out pretty good because we took it to the first show. Some guy came looking for me. He said he had one when he was a kid, and he had to have that bike. And I says, well, I want $4,500 for it. He said, okay, I'll take it. No questions asked. He didn't even finagle the price, nothing. He said, when can I have it?
Wow.
I said, when do you want it? And he says, can I have it tomorrow? I said, sure.
See, that's the fun thing about these bikes, though, especially when you kind of keep a little bit of that originality to it. You have these guys come up and say, oh, I used to have one of those. And then they start telling you about all these great stories. And so it's just that nostalgia piece. It's awesome.
Definitely. Those things are definitely the ultimate conversation piece, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, doesn't matter where you go. You come up to Tyson's coffee shop on Sunday, bikes are parked out there. Somebody inevitably rides up with a really killer vintage bike and everybody flocks around it. And it's a conversation with somebody you've never met before, and it's like you've known them forever, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Chris, you've done, what, 2 or 3 custom builds, 2 and sold them, right? I know that, like, I don't know about you, but every time I'm, like, building something, Susan's, like, the model that I try and, like,
see, the pressure's
compare,
on.
My, the pressure's
compare
on.
My bicycle.
Is that why you guys are doing bicycles now, just to get away from the pressure?
Oh, no. I've got to get the health in check, though, right? You've got to have both of those elements.
That's true. So after that second build for you, did you go over to Zach's bike, your husband?
Yes.
Okay.
But he's kind of a funny case, right? He loves riding them, but hates working on them. So he's like, you go figure it out, and then when you're done, you let me know, and then I'll go ride it for you.
And that was another CB,
that was the CB, Super Sport 750.
So what was the scheme or the idea for that one?
Well, we had a lot of little elements built into that based on the Moulin Labe kind of theme. I don't know if you guys know what that is. Basically, 3%, you know, it took 3% of the population way back when to have the revolution there against the British. So we have little elements in the bike related to that. So come and take it, right? So
that one's not for sale.
Oh, actually, it is for sale. It was for sale and it got sold. Yeah.
He sold it?
Yep. It's in Florida.
No,
really?
Kidding.
Yeah, it's sold.
Wow. I don't even want to ask how much. Don't worry about it.
It went to a good home, though.
Yeah, so. It was a great bike.
And it's kind of a funny story. It's a friend of ours, and so we took it to Barber with us, and we rode it around the track, sort of its final deal with us. And then when Barber was over that weekend, loaded in the U-Haul, and it went off to Florida. So
really?
It was a little bit sad, you know? There was a tear there,
Do you ever get emotional about the bikes that you guys sell? I mean, is there a little part of you that
that's the problem. We never sell them, with the exception of that one.
And
right?
Yours?
Yeah. It's kind of bad. We're like hoarders.
She was looking to sell one a while back, last year, and I told her, just move it over to my garage. And
that's a great idea.
Because we've got so much labor in them, I hate to see them go, you know? And like the one that she built... She built it. We were forgetting about the black one, the 78 that came from Santa Fe.
Mm-hmm.
That was her second build after the green bike. And I love that bike. I put so much sweat and tears into that bike, but it was her design, her build. And she said, I'm gonna sell this bike to build another bike, because she had seen something else she wanted to build. And I asked her, well, how much do you want for this bike? She goes, who wants to buy it? And I says, well, I want to buy it. And she goes, well, if you want to buy it, you can have it for this much. I said, okay.
Which is double.
Right, yeah, of course. So,
that same day, she gave me a price. I went straight up to her house, picked it up, and brought it home before she could sell it to anyone else.
That's awesome. What is it about bikes that it's so hard to get rid of?
Well, there's certain bikes.
Yeah.
Right? I've had a couple bikes, I'm not going to name names, but I've had a couple old Harleys, right, that I was just happy to get rid of.
Yeah.
But then I've had a couple, like the 72 Triumph Bonneville that I had that, man, I'll still kick myself for
that
one.
I know. Every time you mention that bike, you get a little tear
in your eye. But I think everybody's got one bike that they regret getting rid of.
See, that's like the 500 that I first built. I can't see myself ever getting rid of that, you know?
Yeah, you should.
That's special.
Yeah. Eugene, yourself?
Yeah, same thing. You know, the black one that she built, I love that bike. I'd probably sell all my other regular bikes before I sell that bike. Because it's just special. And she even gives them names, Japanese names. Like the one she sold me, its name is Saisei.
Okay.
And the green one actually has a Japanese name also.
Midori, which means green in Japanese,
Steve, you got one that you'll never part with? Or you shouldn't have?
I got rid of a Triumph Tiger that I should have never gotten rid of. And that one I want to kick myself every day for. And then there was a CB750 too that I put a lot of work into that I wish I wouldn't have gotten rid of. But, you know, I've got two BMWs now, vintage BMWs, that I will definitely hang on to forever.
Franco?
Yes. Well, I have two right now. I have that Guzzi that my father-in-law bought me just for the right price. And he was like, hey, you want this? Sure. Okay. And then Deanna's 1980, I think it's an 89 Sportster 1200, because her dad bought that brand new. That was his first Harley. He rode the snot out of it, sold it to her uncle. He rode the snot out of it, and then when he couldn't ride anymore, we asked him, like, hey, you want to sell it? Sure.
See, so it's been in the family.
So that's a family bike. Yeah. That one has to stay there. And that Guzzi, I've always wanted a Guzzi, and my father-in-law knew this, and my father-in-law's always wanted an old Norton Commando. He finally found one up in Santa Fe. So he's like, hey, can you guys go get this for me? I already bought it, but go pick it up. So we went up there to Santa Fe, grabbed it from his cousin. And he's like, hey, just get it running for me and then bring it down when it's done, when it's ready to go. So that's what it is. You know, I tinkered with the car, just tinkered with it, everything there, all the electrical, got it running, rode it up here a little bit and took it down to him. And he tried to pay me. It's like, no, you're my father. I'm not going to let you pay me for working on this thing. And so I think that was his payment. His neighbor had this old Guzzi, this 87 Guzzi. And after he got done talking to him, the guy's like, well, I'll get rid of it for $400. The thing's complete.
Wow.
And so he just sends me his picture and says, hey, do you want this? I'm like, yeah. How much does this guy want? $400, but it's yours. Like, oh, okay.
Wow, that's
so
nice.
We went down to Caruso's, picked it up, and I cleaned the carburetors and charged the battery. And then fired
started
up.
Started right up.
You were right, Tyson. Awesome. We were talking last episode about how Franco ends up with all this stuff.
For free.
All the cool stuff.
All the cool stuff for free.
He just proved that point.
He did.
This is a roundabout way of paying for it.
I'll pay for that commando, though. Have you guys seen this father-in-law's commando?
I haven't seen it yet.
I'll have to pull
it's gorgeous.
For
yeah, you got it for sale. And I actually saw it on Craigslist.
He saw it on Craigslist.
And I was getting ready to at least call the guy and look at it and get some info. And then that day it was gone. And
yep.
This guy pulls up. We were on a ride, right? A bunch of us were going to ride. And he pulls up to the meetup spot on that Norton, and I was like, you got to be kidding me. Please don't tell me you bought the bike.
See, that goes back to that small world,
it's
right?
It's too small in Albuquerque.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, every bike
in the whole state.
In the state sometimes. Yeah. Every bike's been touched by somebody we know, right? Which is, it's a good thing, and sometimes, I don't know. It's good to see bikes from out of state. You know, it's good to see new bikes, and that was one of the cool things, I think, when I saw your build. Those stood out for me because, you know, I'd seen everything in the state for the most part or around town. And then when I saw your guys' lineup of CBs, I was, you know, it took me back. It was kind of shocking. And that was the cool thing for me.
And you guys have won awards, right? I mean.
Yeah, she's got first place on mostly all of them, except for maybe one.
All the shows that you guys have gone to.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
They're all award-winning motorcycles. They've won awards wherever she's taken them and stuff. So
yeah,
it's pretty neat.
How many do you have? How many awards do you have?
Awards? Oh, I don't know. Probably like a dozen or so.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And how many CBs do you guys have?
I knew he was going to ask that. Yeah. See, now you're going to make me count on my fingers. I don't know, what, like 9, 10?
We have Saisei, Mom's Bike, the 500. We had 3 750s at one time.
Right.
The 550s, two of them. Your 500.
Your 500. Yeah.
I'm going to guess 7 or 8.
Wow. Yeah. And my mom's just as much a part of this as
that's
the rest
awesome.
Of the family, too.
Yeah, so. She's sitting right over there. She's just listening.
Yep.
Yeah.
But we made her a 550, or a 500, sorry.
Yes.
Because she's so short, so that's the smallest bike we could.
Does she ride a lot?
Yeah, she rides.
She sure does. We all were riding vintage motorcycles, her husband and I and Susan, and the wife was riding her Fat Boy, and she like felt left out, and she says, wait a minute, something's wrong here. She says, how come you all riding vintage bikes and I don't have one? And we said, would you like one? And she says, yes, I would, but I want something small. So Susan came up with the 500. So, and we
Which
found
is
it,
middle. That's the middle
right?
of the CB.
Yeah.
You could have
I mean,
the
nowadays,
350.
Yeah.
But okay, go ahead.
Now you look at those bikes and you're like, wow, this is tiny compared to everything today.
Yeah, it's
but
true.
Back then, you know, you talk to those old guys that were like, that was the hugest bike back then.
Right.
So.
Well, I'm gonna go here because we love the idea that you are a female doing this. And I think that's really cool. In this day and age now when there's so much talk about women and male, like, you know, issues and things like that, I think it's awesome that you as a woman are doing this and you're pushing the gender bounds and building killer bikes better than any guys I know. And I'm, you know, that's not saying anything, you know, chauvinistic. It's just so many guys have been building for so long and your stuff is just killer. I love your stuff. And what does it feel like to be doing that as a woman? Does it feel different?
You know, I've never really thought about it. And when we started, it's almost a decade ago. So some of those issues, you know, like this coming up with Me Too now and all that, I mean, that wasn't even, people weren't thinking about that.
Yeah.
And when we'd go to the shows, people would be surprised. They would always go up to my dad and say,
really?
Oh, that's a really nice bike. And he would say, well, you got to go talk to her because it was her design and her build. And they're like, wow, you know? And so there was like this extra appreciation, I think, because I am a woman. But I don't know if, I don't know, maybe it has something to do with that elegance you were talking about, if that comes from my female side or what the case might be with that. But I think that people are really encouraging, at least the folks that I've encountered with it. And there's lots of other women out there who are showing up on the scene. I mean, you have Sophie with GT Moto in Austin. You have Moto Lady that's running around out there promoting his stuff like crazy. So there's plenty of women who are doing great stuff related to this. And I think they all inspire one another, and they inspire me too. So I hope that you start to see more women who are doing this kind of stuff.
Well, as a father of two girls, it's inspiring for me. And I hope it's inspiring for them to see that you do whatever you want. Don't be held back by what common perception is, right? And as a father, Gene, I would think that you're super proud of her, right?
Yeah, sure. I've just always told her, you know, if you want to do it, we'll figure out a way to get it done. We'll just do it. I would never discourage her. She'd come to me with different projects. I'd say, let's do it. There's no such thing as I can't. I'd say, let's do it. And we do it.
Which is awesome, because they've done more than just bikes together, right? You did a Jeep, correct? Did you do a CJ?
Mm-hmm.
And you have she built did. A house together?
Yes.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's endless. I think that, you know, the things that you guys are capable of as a pair and as a family, and it's really cool to see. It's refreshing.
And I think that's another neat thing about the community, because there's so many resources out there, you know, like you guys and other folks, or even YouTube, to figure out, okay, how does this damn carburetor work? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, what's going on with this swing arm? How do we fix that? So there's so much out there to help people learn this stuff that there's no excuse not to do it.
Right. Not this day and age.
Yeah, right. Whenever we did run into a problem, we'd go to one of the motorcycle runs and we'd ask everybody we knew. And most people all had ideas or had that problem once before. And then they'd direct us to someone that resolved the problem. So then we'd start talking to them, and then they'd tell us exactly what we need to do or how we need to get it done. So then we'd go back to the house, work on the motorcycle, and we have a little bit more knowledge now.
Yeah.
Because we've talked to other people that have done it way before we did. So.
And that is one of the benefits of doing mostly CBs, because they're all pretty much the same. So you have like one manual that applies to all of them.
Within a few years.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right. But I think that's another point too that I appreciate about the vintage / cafe culture, is that there is somebody for every single year in bike,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Sparky on the Guzzi, Steve on the BMW, you guys on the Hondas, Ron the other day, we were talking with him on the podcast, and he's an RD guy.
Yep.
So there's a niche for everyone. And that's the cool thing. And I think everyone in this culture is pretty open to that, because mm-hmm. they've been there, right? We've all been there. We've had issues with our bikes. And, you know, when somebody comes up and asks us, I haven't met anybody in the community that has been kind of standoffish or didn't want to share their secrets. You know?
That's true. And it's funny, like every time we've come here, I've brought the Guzzi out here to like one of the coffee things, or when we go out there, someone always walks up to me and says, hey, do you know this guy? He has all the parts for the Guzzis in this area. You need to call him. I've gotten like 3 or 4 different phone numbers of people who just walked up to me and say, hey, you need to know this person.
Yeah.
Just people
cool.
just
yeah.
unsolicited just coming up to you.
Super supportive community, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, he's a Guzzi right here. It's a little rare, especially an old one. So, yeah. And they just walk up, like, here you go. You need this card. Oh, wow.
Right.
Same thing like with the Hondas. People just be all over that and know exactly what they're talking about with the Hondas.
Why does he get called? Hey, do you have an extra set of
carburetors?
That's the thing everybody wants for a Honda there.
Right.
It's like, you got extra carbs?
Yeah. Inline 4.
Yeah, there's always people wanting to trade parts because they have parts they no longer need, and they're looking for a certain part, and you might have that part. So, you know, you make their day, they make your day, and it's just one big family, you know?
Oh, it's awesome, how many parts have we swapped?
Oh, I don't even know, man.
I got this. You need that?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
But... So back to that, I mean, you guys have had a lot of different bikes, Harleys, BMWs. What brings you back to the CB?
Just that classic element to it, you know, like it's bomb proof. Those things will run forever as long as you take care of them. And it's just, when you look at them, the engine and everything about it is just so simple, right? When you strip away all that stuff and you just look at the bare bones, it's just a beautiful engine to me, so that's what always brings me back to the CBs.
And we have a garage full of parts.
That's right.
Because we've had so many, so we change this, change that, we put it up on a shelf, and it's whenever we need that part, we get a bike that doesn't have it, we just go back to the shop. There it is.
That must be nice.
Right.
Yeah. Now I know where
that
to look.
Really nice. You got an extra set of carbs, by the way?
We do. We even had an extra engine at one time.
Really?
We went to, was it Roswell to pick up mom's 500?
Right, that's an extra engine that came with my mom's bike. Yeah.
Really?
The 500 we built for her mom, the guy sold us the bike, and then he just said, you guys need an engine?
Sure,
we looked at him like,
no,
right away we're thinking money. We don't want to buy another engine. He says, I don't want no money. You guys just take it. Get out of my garage. And it was sitting there in the corner. So between us three, we picked it up. We said, sure, we'll take it. We can use the parts. I'll be darned. Somebody else needed that engine.
Yep.
We had it at the house. And one of her friends had just blew doors up and said, we need an engine. We told him, we don't even know if it runs. And he says, well, I'll figure it out. If it doesn't run, you'll get it back. I'll be damned. That engine ran.
Yep.
Wow.
And you never got that engine back.
No.
No. So, we're able to help somebody.
Right.
You know?
Well, I know you guys ride modern motorcycles. You've got a few. You've got some BMWs, right? An R9T and a couple of other newer bikes. And I know it's an unfair question to say, which one do you prefer? Do you prefer the vintage bikes or the newer bikes? Because there's something about both. I get that. But really, which one do you prefer?
Oh, see, that's a tough question. I love the vintage bikes because you could be going 40 miles an hour down the road, right? But it feels like it's 80. And it's just like, it's the coolest feeling. It's hard to describe. And the people who do have vintage bikes, they certainly know what I'm talking about. But the modern one is nice too, because you don't really have to worry about coming to a stoplight and then it dying out and kickstarting it or whatever the case may be. You just flick the switch and you're off. So that is my BMWs are what I ride to work, and that I know I'm going to get there for sure and not have to worry about it. So there's pieces that I like about both, obviously. So that's a tough one.
It is a tough question.
Eugene, anything modern?
Well, I do have a modern bike. I have a Road King Harley Davidson. I've had a couple already. And like Susan said, just to go to the store and back or go run parts, that's the bike. But if you want to break the wind and go down and have fun and feel really good about it, vintage bike. Because the new bikes just don't give you that feeling. I don't care how much money you pay for them. They're just not the same.
I'm with your dad on this one, Susan.
Yeah.
There's something about that.
Yeah, the vintage bike just brings you back to your roots, brings you back to your youth. And you're like, wow, I didn't have this when I was this age, but I have it now. And
it's your rosebud.
Wow, it's just really, really fun, cool, and it just vents everything out of your brain. You forget about everything but that bike at that time when you're riding it.
Right.
That's all you're thinking about.
That's a great explanation. And you have a lot of cool, you have some vintage cars.
Yes, I do. Vintage cars are just like the vintage bikes. You get in those cars, they take you back in time. You drive them, you enjoy them, you have fun in them. They're nothing like the modern car. They don't stop as well as the modern car. They're not as fast as the modern car. They don't have AC. But it's just to have all the windows down and just be driving them, enjoying them,
Right. It's more organic, I think, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Tyson and I have talked about this a lot. It's that just the soul of a thing.
Right.
Yeah. If there's a day you have a hard day at work and you just don't feel really good because you've had a really shitty day, you go home, jump in the vintage car, go for a ride, you've done forgot about all that stuff. Same thing with the motorcycle. You jump on a bike, even if you only go like 5 miles, by the time you come back, you feel fresh again. You done forgot about everything that screwed you up that day,
So that's Eugene's plight on life, right?
Right.
Take out the vintage Impala.
Yeah.
That's a great philosophy.
And funny thing is, my daughter will tell you right now, the vintage Impala hasn't been out in at least 3 to 4 years because we've been working on the motorcycles.
I call it the garage queen.
The motorcycles take a lot of our time, when we do have free time, we're working on the motorcycles, and the cars, they're stuck in a corner, and just to get one of the cars going again, it's going to take a day or so.
Yeah.
So we could be working on the motorcycle. And usually we're trying, we have not really a deadline, but she wants to get a certain bike finished to take it to a different show to show it off, or maybe just see what people have to say about it,
Right.
Because basically, I told her a long time ago, you're not building these bikes to win anything. You're building these bikes just to relax, enjoy, grow some patience, and just look at something that you built yourself.
Right.
You
know? And spend
that's
time
what
with
it's
dad.
All about.
And spend time with dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how cool is that? I mean, that's so awesome.
Yeah, there's definitely a Zen feeling, right? I mean, you can see it about Eugene. There's like this air of like relaxation and kind of Zenness to it. He's like a Yoda version of yeah, cafe basically, racer.
Basically, that's what it is. Yoda with machines, you know?
Right.
Go home, tear something apart, make it better, put it back together, and go inside your dinner and start your day all over again.
There yeah, you but go. He made you a know? Good point, though, and kind of back to what Steve was talking about. You know, the new modern, something you can go to the store and buy versus something you made yourself. So there's like, you know, a really good feeling when you can look at that and know that you built that. That's just awesome.
Yeah.
So what's next?
Oh, okay. In the backyard under a blue tarp is this poor little Honda 500T twin. So that is what's next. And he keeps cool. bugging me. So
yeah.
I have some ideas.
Is it going to be ready for the rally? The Duke City Rockers rally in September?
I think we could do it. Yes.
It's a few months away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a timeline for sure.
It's one of those bikes that it's so rare. It was like, do we cafe it or do we restore it?
Because it's all there. It's all
so
original.
So we sort of restored it back to its glory, but didn't do the paint and stuff. But it's all there. And we just can't come to terms to start taking it apart, to change it.
Yeah.
So that's why I've been bugging her. We need to do something with the 500T. If you're not going to change it, let's get it cleaned up, paint it, and sell it. So it's so rare and original, or let's change it.
Yeah, but like with every build, you get new ideas for the next one. So yeah. I have some ideas that would be really cool for that.
Well, we're going to have to thank you guys for stopping in. Today was really cool talking
sure,
to you guys.
It was a good time.
Is there anything you'd like to say to people listening about like just the dynamic between the two of you working together that you know you can inspire some other people that are listening with?
I would just have to say if there's something you want to do or something you're looking to do or something you want to chase down, just chase it down. Go after it. Just do it. Because life is so short and by the time you know it, everything you say, I wish I could have done, it's too late. You're not here no more. So you might as well do it while you have time and while you're here. So that's the way I look at it.
Wisdom.
That is.
Yeah, there's no way I can top that.
There's no way.
Can't beat Yoda.
Well, thanks everybody for listening to the Rust Is Gold Racing podcast. Thank you, Susan. Thank you, Eugene.
Thank you for having
us. It was
great.
It was awesome. I totally relaxed just listening to you guys talk. That's how zen this was.
I was real relaxed, so I fell over.
If you ever really want to relax, come on over to the house. We'll put you to work.
And on that note, our next episode will be coming out in a couple weeks. And thanks for listening, everybody.
Down the way, not too far, an old-time rockabilly coffee bar. Wrecking machine tucked in the back. Elvis singing about a Cadillac. I'm on a BSA, been riding all day. Leather's on, goggles too. Triumphant, I don't know what you wanna do. My baby's on a Vincent, has been for quite a while. She said it's rocking just her style.
So let's ride,
so let's ride,
so let's ride,
so let's ride. Come on, turn up, I got double cams. American rocker, as a matter of fact.